Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Widely inaccurate with significant errors and at times just wrong. That's the assessment of recent research which calculated the cost of United Ireland would come to €20 billion a year for two decades. DCU's Vice President of Research, Professor John Doyle, made the claims at the Oireachtas Committee on the Good Friday Agreement yesterday, and he joins me now. And also on the line is John Fitzgerald, Adjunct Professor in Economics at Trinity College Dublin and one of the authors of the original research. So, Professor John Doyle, to you first, and thank you for joining us. Will you take us through the issues you have with the other John's report, John Fitzgerald's report?
Of course. I mean, we are making estimates. I've nothing ever made an error in life myself, and you're making judgments of what might happen in the future. So, but there's assumptions in the report that I think are just so unlikely that the notion of 20 by 20, though catchy, is not a basis for actually making decisions. I suppose maybe three things just to start the discussion. The report adds over €4.2 billion per year to the cost of unity by increasing public sector wages to southern levels on day one. But it makes no allowance for the fact that overwhelmingly, given it's a pay rise, it would be at the rate of 40% if it was happening with today's tax rates, PRSI of another 4%, and a pension contribution of around 10%. So that's 54.5% technically, reducing that cost immediately by €2.2 billion. It's not a cost you might get back literally at the end of every month. It never leaves the exchequer. So it's a dramatic reduction. Mm-hmm. The report itself acknowledges it took 30 years to regularise public sector wages in Germany. I acknowledge, as the report says, that's a long period. We will be unlikely to do that. But the cost of living wouldn't increase in Northern Ireland the morning after unity. The biggest difference in cost is housing. That would certainly converge or be likely to converge over time. So I think there will also be negotiations with trade unions, terms and conditions, pension contributions, a whole pile of things are different in North and South. So if you were to do it at half the speed of Germany over 15 years and you made a gesture in advance of those trade union negotiations in year one, you know, roughly taking 115, that would have a cost of 133 million in year one. An awful long way away from €4.2 billion. And just one other thing then before, Northern Ireland is clearly in deficit. The taxes raised in Northern Ireland don't cover the full cost of Northern Ireland's expenditure, plus what the UK attributes to Northern Ireland on a pro rata basis, things like debt, central cost of defence, including the nuclear programme. Just to take the debt and pensions issue, John talks about waiving UK debt in the context of unity and that would be unlikely to happen. But it's not a question of waiving it. It's legally owned by the United Kingdom.
So we would never be reasonably expected to repay that money.
I mean, why would an international banker who was a contractor to UK Treasury rock up in Dublin and say, London told me you owe 2% of this? Like, that's, we could voluntarily agree to pay it if we got a much better deal on something else. But mm-hmm. the notion that you have to pay it and you're stuck. And the report says Russia managed to negotiate an agreement where all the post-Soviet states took a share of it. That's just factually not true.
Okay,
Russia inherited the entirety of the Soviet debt.
Let's hear from John Fitzgerald on this. So, John, you've been accused here of making unlikely assumptions. What do you say?
Well, our numbers were first published in an academic journal in 2020 and were checked out by anonymous referees. The numbers have been there. We presented them to the Oireachtas Committee in 2021. And there was no comment. Suddenly, this time, there is a reaction. Our numbers are also confirmed by a paper by Esmond Burney, a leading Northern Ireland economist who's on the Northern Fiscal Council, in a paper he published last autumn. So there's a lot of backing to this. Can I take up the point? John said, all right, one of the things we say, if you have a United Ireland, welfare rates and pay rates in Northern Ireland are much, in the public sector, are much lower than the Republic. You couldn't have them as the poor cousins in a United Ireland forever. You would have to pretty rapidly pay the same social welfare payments and pay the same pay rates.
Would you have to do that from day one, though, John?
Not necessarily, but you can't delay it long. The idea that Northern Ireland would vote to become part of Ireland and you're going to be an inferior citizen for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, Maybe that can happen. Maybe John feels that I'm unrealistic in thinking that a united Ireland would be united in terms of rights and privileges. But the point which John makes is, if you raise pay rates in the north, you will get back a significant amount of it in tax. But what he's forgetting, in order to raise pay rates in the north, our point is the people in the Republic will have to pay much higher taxes in order to fund
okay.
it.
And, John,
and when you raise taxes, you deflate the economy and you lose revenue. So actually, there would be no net effect on taxation. It would cost about 5% of national income, which would have to be paid for by the people
okay.
of the Republic.
And John Fitzgerald, why do you say that if there were a united Ireland, that united Ireland would be on the hook for Northern Ireland pensions? Why do you make that claim?
In any divorce, before it's completed legally, you have to settle the assets and liabilities of the couple. And that has been that was the case when West Virginia left Virginia in the 1860s. When the Irish Free State was established in the treaty in 1921, in December 1921, the Irish Free State agreed as a condition of leaving that they would accept a share of the debt. The same in terms of the breakup of Czechoslovakia in the early 1990s. And what John is not taking account of is there is a place called Scotland which is pondering leaving or has pondered leaving the UK. And any deal done for Northern Ireland, John believes the UK government will be exceptionally generous in the divorce settlement. But that divorce settlement would be a precedent for Scotland and would encourage Scotland to leave, who is very generous. So I just think that it's unrealistic to believe the UK will be incredibly
okay.
generous.
So John Doyle, you're underestimating the UK here. That's what John Fitzgerald is saying. Like, they're not going to be kind and generous to us. And that issue of Scotland has been raised many times. They don't want to show them that it's going to be cheap to leave.
No, and as ever, we don't only need to go back to Virginia in the 19th century. Look, for example, the UK just negotiated an agreement with the European Union as part of the withdrawal in the worst of circumstances, with the worst of bad feeling between the UK delegation and the UK. And they never once put on the table that they would walk away from the pension contributions for civil servants who'd spent part of their life working for the civil service and part of their life working for the European commissions. It was a pro rata in the exact same way as Irish people who work part of their life in England and part of their life in Ireland. It's a really good bit of the civil service. They work out a pro rata based on your years, and that's how it works out. So there's modern examples of this that are going on right today that would do this. But the question is, of course, it's not impossible that the UK would walk away. I mean, legally, the Irish government could abolish the Old Dailish pension in the morning. There's nothing to stop them doing so. But would they do it? I think it's extraordinarily unlikely from a reputational point of view that the United Kingdom would tell retired soldiers, retired police officers, retired nurses that they're not paying a penny despite paying 40 years' contributions. And Scotland is different because Scotland had no legal right to leave the United Kingdom. It was pleading with Westminster for the legal right to do so, a right they haven't been allowed to the second time around. So they had to negotiate for that right. Ireland does not need, or Northern Ireland does not need to negotiate for the right to hold a referendum. It's enshrined in the Good Friday Agreement. So therefore, we don't need to offer to pay debt to get the right to hold a referendum. And if a referendum is passed, British legislation, a treaty lodged with the United Kingdom and the Good Friday Agreement all guarantee that Britain will allow that to happen mm-hmm. and won't hold it up in negotiations over debt.
Well, John Doyle, can we come back to the overall figure? Because John Fitzgerald's figure, as I said there at the beginning, 20 billion euro a year over 20 years. What do you say it will cost?
There is a deficit in Northern Ireland, but there are things like Northern Ireland's share of the nuclear programme and debt and pensions, as we've discussed. I think that the inherited fiscal deficit in Northern Ireland is around about 1.5 billion. There's a lot of spending would be required in Northern Ireland to improve the economy. You've put in a round figure of a billion in year one. That would allow state pensions to be equalised on first day. I could imagine that being a popular decision for a government to do.
Okay, so we're up
pensions,
to 2.5. About 2.5
billion. So, for example, and John's paper allows that in 20 years' time, Northern Ireland would still be an economic basket case. Where I say, of course, we can't predict the future, but why after 20 years with the same tax regime, the same public policies, would Northern Ireland not look like Cork and Kerry? We're not even talking about comparing it to Dublin. Why would, at the moment, foreign direct investment in Northern Ireland is about one-fifth of what it is in the Republic pro rata.
But a lot
tourism
would have to change, wouldn't it, John Doyle, in order for it to look like Cork or Kerry, like you would have a lot of, and I remember the time of John's report being published, the education system would have to change. There's so much there that needs to be addressed at a granular level before economic prosperity might happen.
And of course, and I absolutely agree with John. One thing we absolutely agree on is the 11 plus needs to go in Northern Ireland. I think we're absolutely toe-to-toe on that one, our agreement on that one. But I don't think, John has argued it took 25 years from the introduction of free education in the South to us taking an economic step forward in the 90s. But of course, the single market, all sorts of things happened in that time as well. About two-thirds of Northern Ireland's young students who go to study in England, Scotland and Wales don't come home. So if there were economic opportunities with good wages in Northern Ireland, you don't need to waste a generation to create those graduates.
So can you give me, John Doyle, can you give me a counter figure to the 20 billion per annum over 20 years that John Fitzgerald has?
So if we look at what happened in Central Europe after those countries joined the European Union, there was basically three categories. Those who grew the slowest grew about 1% faster than Western Europe. The average was about 2% faster than Western Europe. And the best of them grew at a rate on average over 10 years of 3% faster than Western Europe. If it was 2%, the deficit would be gone in about 10 and a half years. We would be borrowing about 0.75% over that period, which would make no difference to Ireland's borrowing rates or capacity to repay. And there would be gradual growth over that time to start repaying the cost of things that would gradually, I mean, the pensions would transfer fully to Ireland over 40 years.
So how much, John, over the 10 and a half years per annum?
I would think 2.5 billion in year one, then gradually declining down to zero by year 11.
John Fitzgerald.
There's a whole series of papers which show that it would be around 10 billion. And like they've taken account of the fact the corporation tax revenue would be higher in a United Ireland, and you'd save a billion on defence. So taking account of all of that, you're looking at about 10 billion. And if you raise welfare rates and pay rates for public servants in the north to what they're in the south, then it's 20 billion.
Mm-hmm. All of those papers that say 10 billion, and they're out there, including John, all assume that Ireland will voluntarily repay a debt of 2 billion a year, which we don't legally owe. And they all assume that Britain would completely walk away from its pension responsibilities to its retired public servants. And I just think those are so unlikely. In the case of debt, impossible to imagine.
John Fitzgerald, go ahead.
I said nothing on public service pensions. It's about the pensions paid, the retirement pension in Northern Ireland, which is much lower than the Republic. And that pension is paid for both in the Republic, in Northern Ireland, the United Kingdom, from our social insurance contributions. That goes to pay the pension. So John is assuming that the Dublin government would collect the social insurance contributions from Northern Ireland, but the London government would still pay the social insurance pensions. That's just, I found utterly implausible.
But that's what happens at the moment in terms of people who transfer between Ireland, Britain, or English people who retire into the south of Spain. It's on the basis of the numbers of years you paid in. And the 10 billion figure does include 3.8 billion of pension payments, a mixture of state and public service pensions. So it's embedded into the deficit that exists in Northern Ireland at the moment. And the 10 billion figure only happens if we decide to pay UK's debt voluntarily, even though we legally don't own it, and if Britain walks away completely. Of course we'll collect social insurance and pension contributions, because there'll be a pension liability building up one year after another for each of those people who start to pay their pensions into United Ireland. So that liability builds up from day one.
John Fitzgerald, there's nothing in what John has said or what he has written or what he said at the Joint Oireachtas Committee that changes your view on that figure that you published of 20 billion a year over 20 years.
No.
John, I'm afraid you haven't managed to convince John Fitzgerald,
no,
but you still say that he's making unlikely assumptions.
It is. I think it's just extraordinary to assume that a group of civil servants going into negotiations with the British government come out with the worst possible deal where Britain doesn't put a penny on the table for pensions. So the worst case scenario, and in their paper they suggest that the government, but even though it's the worst possible deal, we should still pay 2 billion a year for UK debt we don't legally own. I mean,
all right.
There's no circumstance in which that happens.
All right, to the two Johns, Professor John Doyle and Professor John Fitzgerald, thank you both very much. Up next, Dan Healy, head of RTE 2FM, will join us here in the studio.
Text
51551. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.